We're in this series that we've started. It's going to be a 12-week series. It's called In the Fire. Everybody say, In the Fire.
In the Fire.
In the Fire. Because what we understand about life is that many times life feels like we're in a world that we don't belong in. Life feels like it constantly puts pressure on us to cave on what we believe, to compromise on our convictions, to fall in line, and to even bow to things that the world would normally bow in. And God calls us to be a people who stand in the fire, that no matter what we face in life, we don't compromise our convictions, we don't compromise our beliefs, we don't compromise our purpose, we don't compromise what God's truth says about us and for us. We walk according to his ways no matter what pressure comes our way. We know that pressure comes in many different ways. There's pressure to believe certain things. There's pressure to fall in line with some political party over another. There's pressure to submit to one president or another. There's pressure to build a bag and to establish riches and to get more and get more and get more, because the more we have, the more satisfied we'll be, when in reality, the more we have, a lot of times, the emptier we end up being. And so how can we be a people who not only trust God, but trust him enough to obey him and remain faithful no matter what pressure comes our way? And so we ended last week in the chapter 2, where Daniel and his friends, their lives are put in danger because Nebuchadnezzar, who is the king of the Babylonian Empire, has had these dreams that are keeping him up at night, and feels this stress and anxiety because he has no idea what they mean. So he puts a little test together, and he tells all of his magicians and his sorcerers and people that he would consider wise men, and he says, if you don't tell me not only what the dream means, but what the dream is, I will kill you and your family if you can't do so. And so Daniel finds himself in a position where you're asking me to do something that I cannot do in and of myself. But Daniel does what we should all do, and that is to go to God with anything and everything we face, because we ought to be a people who pray first and have prayer as a first response, not a last resort. So Daniel goes and he prays unto God. God gives him both the dream and the interpretation. And Nebuchadnezzar then finds himself in a position where he cannot deny that God is the God of gods. That's where we end up in verse 46, when it says, then King Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face and paid homage to Daniel and commanded that an offering and an incense be offered up to him. Verse 47 says, the king answered and said to Daniel, truly your God is God of gods and Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, for you have been able to reveal this mystery. So Nebuchadnezzar seems to have this real encounter with God, where he acknowledges that God is the God of gods and he is the king of all lords. But then fast forward just a few verses, and now we find ourselves in Daniel chapter 3, where he's doing the opposite of what his profession seems to claim, where he is doing the opposite. And rather than claiming God to be the God of gods, Nebuchadnezzar now in verse 1 begins to establish his own God, which is what we typically do. We say God is not enough, so we establish our own idols and we worship our own ideologies. And rather than fully surrendering to God, we end up being like Nebuchadnezzar, who in verse 1 it says, King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and its breadth was 6 cubits. For those of you who are like me, who don't know what that means for the Bible, I had to do some research, and 90 cubits or 60 cubits and 9 and 6 cubits actually end up being an idol that's 90 feet tall by 9 feet wide. So he builds this gold idol, okay? And it's not the fact that he simply builds the idol, but then he says he set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Verse 2, then King Nebuchadnezzar sent to gather the satraps and the prefects and the governors and the counselors and the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So what he's doing is he's gathering everyone up to then come and bow to this idol and serve this idol, which is what we have in verse 3. Then the satraps, the prefects, and the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces gathered for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up, and they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Verse 4 says, and the herald proclaimed aloud, you are commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that when you hear the sound of the horn, the pipe, the lyre, the trigon, the harp, the bagpipe, and every kind of music, sounds like a hot mess. That sounds like a lot, right? You ever heard bagpipes before? Not a pleasant sound. And every kind of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace. Now, here's what's interesting about this. How do you go from declaring that God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings to, hey, everyone must bow down to this idol and serve this idol when you hear music? This is what teaches us as believers that not everything who claims to follow Christ is of Christ. Not everyone who claims to be a disciple of Jesus is a disciple of Jesus. In fact, the Bible makes it very clear in the book of Matthew that there are going to be people who claim that Jesus is Lord. And they will come to Jesus and say, Lord, Lord, have I not baptized people in your name? Have I not proclaimed your truth? Have I not cast out demons? Have I not done all these incredible, spiritual, and beautiful things? And Jesus says that on that day, he will look at those people and declare to them, depart from me, for I never knew you. And here's why. Because although you may know about God, it does not reveal that you know God. Although Nebuchadnezzar had a moment in his life where he recognized that God was God and that he is the king or the Lord of kings, it does not mean that he knows the God of all gods and he knows the Lord of all kings. You can have a belief in God but not actually believe in him. And that's actually a dangerous place to be. The most modern example that I could give you about this is when Kanye makes a gospel album 1 year, and then a few years later, we see where this man's life is, right? Why? Because although he knew of God and he knew about God, does not mean that he knows God. And it's very important that we are able to distinguish between the two. Because if you don't, we could be led astray into worshiping things that the culture deems us to worship. We could be led astray into believing that just because somebody makes a profession, that that is the reality of their lives. And so we could end up following people that we shouldn't be following, doing things that we shouldn't be doing, and bowing to things that the Lord doesn't want us to bow to. Now, this is a problem for Daniel and his friends. Because if you know anything about the Bible, you know that there's this thing called the Ten Commandments. And the very first of those Ten Commandments is this. Give me Exodus chapter 20, verses 3 and 4. It says, you shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make yourself carved image, or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water underneath. Verse 5, you shall not bow down to them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God. Now here's the reality. We don't like that word. Because culture has deemed us, or culture has trained us, the world has trained us, being in unhealthy relationships has trained us to believe that to be jealous is to be insecure. But that is not necessarily true. If I am jealous for my wife, That means I am not going to share her heart with any of you. I love you all, but she mine. You know what I mean? Not because I'm insecure, but because I love her that much that I will not share her with another man. And God is no different. If that is the way that I love my wife, imagine the way that God loves you, that he refuses to share your heart, your affection, and your attention with anything that will destroy your life. And whether you want to acknowledge, believe it or not, everything that is not of him will eventually destroy your life. You could give your heart and your love towards money, and money will leave you empty. You could give your heart and your life towards drugs and addiction will ruin your life. You could give your heart and your love and your affection to every kind of relationship that presents itself. And I promise you, humanity will mess it up and screw it up so bad that it will destroy you. Nothing in this life is worth all of your love, all of your affection, all of your attention except for him. Therefore, he is a jealous God who will not share you with anything else. But let's take it a little bit further and continue reading, because he doesn't stop there. He says, I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and the fourth generation of those who hate me. That means you choosing other idols is not just a love affection towards other idols. It's actually a hatred towards God. That's tough. That's a tough pill to swallow. I get it. Because we like to think of everything so lightly. Because too many of us have played the game of Christianity for way too long. Too many of us think that we could like give God some of our lives and some of our heart, and like we don't have to be that radical. We don't have to be that in love. We don't have to be that submitted, that devoted, that committed. You don't have to be that kind of a crazy Christian, because anything that actually proves loyalty and commitment and devotion to something that doesn't represent this world gets labeled as radical and bigoted and crazy. But the Bible teaches me that if God doesn't have any of my heart or some of my heart, if God only has some of it, he has none of it. That to have other idols is actually an act of hatred unto God. And that's a very dangerous place to be. So I share that to establish why in the next few verses we will see that when the Bible says in verse 7, therefore, as soon as all the peoples heard the sound of the horn and the pipe, the lyre, the trigon, the harp, the bagpipe, and every kind of music, all the peoples, nations, and languages fell down and worshiped the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So everyone here, all of the nations, all of the tongues, all of the people, they hear the sound and do what the king says, and they bow down, except for three people: Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Three young teenagers who said, I love God too much to bow down and serve anything else, and that I will do so no matter what it costs me. And when they decide that they refuse to bow, then they face an opposition, and all of the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the wise men go before the king and they say, hey, King Nebuchadnezzar, there's a few people here that refuse to worship your gods. Listen to me. Whenever you decide to be devoted to God, things will get uncomfortable for you. You don't even have to be wild and crazy and annoying, and you don't have to be one of those Christians that's constantly posting on Facebook. The moment you decide to stand for something, people will get upset with you. They will turn their backs on you. You'll lose relationships. You'll lose friendships. You'll be accused. You'll be talked about, because things will get uncomfortable for you. And if they're not getting uncomfortable, it might be because you're not standing and you're actually bowing. Daniel's friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they refuse to bow. They go before the king And they tell the king, listen, you've got people on your team because Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were all a part of this group of people that the king deemed as his wise men. So they were a part of his inner circle. And they're like, you got people on your inner circle that refuse to believe what you believe, bow down to what you believe, worship what you believe, and serve what you believe. And so the king then gets frustrated. And in verse 15, it says, or 14, it says, Nebuchadnezzar answered and said to them, is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Verse 15 says, now if you are ready, when you hear the sound of the horn, the pipe, the lyre, the trigon, the harp, the bagpipe, and every kind of music, to fall down and worship the image that I have made, well and good. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands? Pause. Remember, Nebuchadnezzar said, this is the God of gods, acknowledging that God had some power. Just a few verses later, he's saying, what God has the power to deliver you? Now, there's all kinds of reasons why this might be so. Remember that Nebuchadnezzar had just acknowledged the God of gods. And now we find him doing this. You know what I've discovered about life? You know what I've discovered about the world? I've been a believer for over 22 years. And what I have discovered is that most people do not have a problem with professing Christ as a way or a religion or a prophet or a good person. What people have a problem with is when we profess that he is the way, that he is the truth, that he is the only way at which anyone can come to the knowledge of the Father, that there are no other gods, and he is the only God, and his way is the only way, and his truth is the only truth. They don't have a problem with you professing that you follow Jesus. They just have a problem with you not following anything else they have to offer you. That's why they don't have a problem with your ideologies or your convictions or belief as it pertains to marriage, as the Bible declares it, which is to be marriage between a husband and a wife who are married together in covenant with God. They don't have a problem with that as long as you also accept what they want to teach, which is that marriage could be with anything and anyone that they want it to be with. They don't have a problem with your views on sexuality. They just have a problem with your views on sexuality being the only truth that you live by. And so what ends up happening is when you don't bow, the pressure rises. When you don't bow and you don't give in and you don't compromise, the heat starts to build up. And so for these young men who take a stand when everyone else bows, the king says, I'm going to give you a second chance. And if you do not bow when the music plays, we will cast you into the furnace and you will burn alive. Now, what I love is that these young men had a boldness and a faith that really teaches us how to have a faith when we're being thrown into the fire. Look at what they say. In verse 16, it says, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you on this matter. Stop. What they're saying is, I don't even have to tell you why it is we believe what we believe. I don't have to give you an answer. I don't have to respond. I don't have to defend myself. All I have to do is stand here and be obedient to God. That sometimes you don't need to say a word. Sometimes you can just keep your mouth shut and let your life testify to the goodness and the faithfulness of God. But they continue, and they say, although I have no need to answer you in this matter, in verse 17 it says, but if this be so, our God whom we serve, watch this, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king, but if not, you see, this is real faith right here. Real faith is not, I only believe in God when he does what I tell him to do. Real faith is not, I only serve God when God does everything I tell him to do, when he gives him everything I tell him I want, and when he does what I say to do. God, real faith doesn't say, I believe in God when I say God, when I ask God to jump and God says how high, because that's how we treat him. You see, real faith is believing that God can, being convinced that he will, but also being committed enough that even if he doesn't, you're still only going to serve, love, and obey him. Because real faith is not just trusting in God's power, but trusting in his purpose. And many of us, we don't mind trusting in his power. We just have a hard time trusting in his purpose. And so we don't submit and we aren't faithful because we're only faithful so long as God does X, Y, and Z. But I wonder if we could be the kind of people who says, even if God doesn't do X, Y, and Z, he still has my heart. Even if God doesn't heal me, he still has my heart. Even if God doesn't save me, he still has my heart. Even if God doesn't prevent me from going through the fire, he still has my heart. Even if God doesn't restore my marriage, he still has my heart. Even if God doesn't change the diagnosis or doesn't heal the cancer or doesn't do what I think he should do, he still has my heart. I believe that he can. I'm convinced that he will. But I'm committed to him even if he doesn't. That's why when people come to you with that pressure, listen to me. I'm 38 years old. For the longest time, I thought there was something wrong with me because I am the most obstinate person you will ever meet. I'm the kind of person that no matter what you believe, if I believe it's wrong, I will stand on the fact that it's wrong. And if I believe it's right, I will stand on the fact that I believe it's right. And I used to believe, man, I am just so stubborn. I am so arrogant. I'm so prideful and obstinate. And really, what God has done is he's taken all of that and now he's used it for his glory to the point where no matter what I face in life, you can't convince me that God is not worth serving because I've seen too much. I've experienced too much. I've been delivered from too much. I've seen him provide in places where I was lacking. I've seen him heal when people were sick. And you know what? I've seen his goodness and faithfulness even when he didn't. And the fact that my circumstances change does not mean that God ever does. Yes. And you've got to believe that. Real faith says, I believe that he can. I'm convinced that he will. But even if he doesn't, he still has my heart. And I cannot give it to anybody else. That's real faith. Real faith isn't holding on for my circumstances to change. Real faith is standing on the fact that even if they don't, God is still good. He's still faithful. He's still kind. He still restores. He still heals. He still delivers. He still sets the captive free. He still changes and heals. He still delivers. He still restores marriages. He still saves families. He still saves children. He still is the one who is seated on the throne, and nothing in my life that I could ever face will change that. That's real faith. And so I'm going to stand when the world tells me to bow. Because faith is not about trusting in God's power. It's about trusting in God's purpose. Now watch what happens. In verse 19, it tells us that Nebuchadnezzar was filled with fury. And the expression of his face was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. In other words, he went from being disappointed in them to flat out outraged with them. And it says he ordered the furnace heated 7 times more than it was usually heated. Think about how hot your food comes out when you put it in an air fryer. Now multiply that 7 times and it's coming out like it came out of a volcano. That's what we're talking about, right? And so it says that then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with fury, verse 20, and he ordered some of the mighty men of his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Verse 21, then these men who were bound in their cloaks, their tunics, their hats, and their other garments, and they were thrown into the fire, the burning fiery furnace. Verse 22, because the king's order was urgent, the furnace overheated. The flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell bound into the burning fiery furnace. Stop. There were men carrying them into the furnace. Those men ended up on fire. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego ended up untouched. The very thing that the enemy tried to use to destroy them is the thing that God used to shame the enemy. Listen to me. I'm going to get Pentecostal here for just a split second, if you will allow me to. This is for the people who think that everything you face in life is out to destroy you. When God says, if you would just trust in me, I'm getting ready to use it to turn it around for your good. The very thing that the enemy intends to destroy you is the very thing that God will use to shame him. You want to see if that's true and biblical? I'll point you to the Red Sea. You see, Pharaoh trapped the Israelites at the Red Sea. And what ended up happening? God parts the Red Sea, allows the Israelites to cross, and then uses the Red Sea to drown out the Egyptians. You want me to go further? Haman, who's the man who wanted to hang a Mordecai in the book of Esther, he builds gallows. And you know what ends up happening? The same gallows he builds to hang Mordecai is the same gallows that he hung from. You want me to go further? Daniel, later on in chapter 6, is thrown into a den, in a lion's den, by his enemies who created the den to be able to have him go into it and be eaten by lions. You know what happened to his enemies? They were the ones who later ended up in the den eaten by lions. I'll take it even further. Saul, who relentlessly pursued David to take his life, ended up dying by falling on his own sword. The enemy hung Jesus, used Judas to betray him, put him on a cross, and the cross, rather than only becoming a place of death, ended up being a place that brought life and ended up being the place where Jesus would then rise in victory, which gives us victory in life. Don't tell me that God will not take what the enemy intends to destroy you for your good. The same men who were throwing them into the fire are the same men who burned alive in it. I'll say it this way. What the enemy intends for evil, God uses for his good. Because it ain't just about you. And so you're praying that God would help you to prevent the fire. You're asking, God, remove this pressure from me. You're saying, God, change this situation. What if God is saying the reason I haven't prevented it is because I'm getting the ready show up in it? What if the reason God has not prevented the fire is because you don't understand that he's getting ready to show up and show off in it? And so the thing that you're asking God to change, God is saying, if you would just hold on for a little bit, you might actually get to see something that will blow your mind, because your fire could end up being a platform for his glory. Look at what happens. Right after it says that the men who went to throw them into the flame, I'll read it again in verse 22. The flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Verse 23, and these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell bound into the fiery furnace. And verse 24 says, then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished and rose up in haste, and he declared to his counselors, did we not cast three men into the fire? And they answered him and said to the king, true, O king. Verse 25, he answered and said, but I see four men bound up or four men unbound walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt, and the appearance of the fourth is like the son of the gods. Here's what's happening. This is what we call in theology a theophany. Everybody say theophany. You're learning theology today, okay? Theophany. It comes from the word which is theos and phanin, right? Can you put that up? I think I have that on there. Yep. Theos, which means God, and phanin, to appear or show, which it just simply means that this is an occurrence where God appears and shows up. Now, most scholars believe that this isn't just a theophany, it's a Christophany. This is Jesus showing up before his incarnation. So what you need to understand is that God never promised to prevent your fire. He always promised to show up in it. I'll put it this way. God doesn't always prevent the fire, but he will always be present in it. Isaiah chapter 43, verse 2, it says this. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you, and through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. When you walk through the fire, you shall not be burned, and the flame shall not consume you. For I am the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel, your Savior. I give Egypt as your ransom, Cush and Seba in exchange for you. What does that mean? That what God is telling you, that whether you walk through waters, you walk through rivers, or you walk through fires, none of that will have an effect with you so long as he is with you. So what really makes a difference is not God manifesting his power, but God manifesting his presence. What really changes everything is not that God is working for you, but that God is working with you. What really makes a difference is not that God is showing off his power, but that he's showing off his presence. And that encourages me because it lets me know that no matter what I face in life, I never face it alone. And so you're praying that God would prevent the fire while God is saying, I'm about to present myself. And you're praying that God would change your situation. Listen to me. This is for everyone. For everyone that has ever felt so much pressure in their life that they felt they were alone. This is for everyone who the enemy has lied to and deceived into believing that there's no hope for you, that there is no help for you, that God will not show up, that God has abandoned you, that God is leaving you and forsaking you. Listen to me. I want you, if you remember anything, remember this, that the reason you can stand firm in your faith is not because God changes everything, but because God is present in everything. That no matter what you face in your life, you are never alone, you are never abandoned, you will never be forsaken, he will always be with you, he will always walk with you, he will always fight with you, as long as you place your trust and your faith in him. Here's the reality. By yourself, you won't make it. I'm going to say that again. The reality and the scary thing is that by yourself, and you know this to be true. You know this to be true because some of you are in this place where life has overwhelmed you so badly. You are so lost of hope. You are so anxious and so worried and so freaked out, and you feel so alone and so abandoned, and it's because you're walking through life alone. But the moment you decide to trust in him, that's when God shows up. So stop praying that God will help you to avoid the fire and start praying that God would use it for his glory. Stop praying that God would change your situation. And start praying that God would change your heart. Stop praying that God would help you to prevent the pressure. And start praying that God would show up with his presence and reveal his glory, not just to me, but to the world around me. Because when God shows up, and trust you me, he will, not only does he show off for you, but he shows up for all those around you, the enemy that is trying to destroy you. It says in verse 26, that Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the burning fiery furnace, and he declared, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here." Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the fire, and the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the king's counselors gathered together and saw that the fire had not had any power over the bodies of those men, and the hair of their head was not singed, their cloaks were not harmed, and no smell of fire had come upon them. Verse 28, and Nebuchadnezzar answered and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servant, who trusted him and set aside the king's command and yielded up their bodies rather than serve and worship any god except their own." Look at me. Nebuchadnezzar went from saying, "What God can," to saying, "No other God can." Remember, before he throws them in the fire, he says to them, "What God can deliver you from the fire or my hands?" And by the end of this experience, his word changes from "What God can save you and deliver you?" to "There is no other God that can." And you've got to get to a place in your life. Because listen, you could come to church every single week, Sunday after Sunday after Sunday. But if you don't have a radical encounter in your own heart, and you don't resolve within your own heart that God is the only God you will serve, when pressure comes, you will fold. And if you fold, there's a much worse fire that we will have to face. That's why later on in the Bible, Jesus says, "Don't fear the one that can destroy the body. Fear the one who has the power to destroy the soul and cast it into the fire." The world is getting harder to stand firm in. Your faith is going to be tested more and more each and every single day. It'll be tested by the culture. It'll be tested by every ideology that comes this way. It'll be tested by your friends in school. It'll be tested by your circumstances and your experiences. And the only way you'll remain standing when the fire hits is by ensuring that you have the fourth man that we just talked about. Because you think his power is to get you out, when in reality, his power is actually to get you through. But you can't get through by yourself. So I want to give you an opportunity to invite that fourth man into your life. I want to give you an opportunity to not just put your trust in him, but to surrender to his purpose. You see, it's one thing to believe that God is powerful. In fact, the Bible tells us that even demons believe that Jesus has power. It's a whole nother thing to trust that his purpose for you is that you would come to know him, so that when life gets hard and you stand before him having endured it all, you could actually stand before him knowing that when you stand before him, he looks down at you and he says, "This is my child in whom I am well pleased." You don't get to stand through the fire without him. And here's the thing, at the end of the day, what this really symbolizes is that we will all have to stand before a fire one day. And if we don't have Jesus in our hearts and we haven't surrendered our lives to him, that fire will consume us. But so long as we have surrendered to Him, there's not a fire that we could ever face that we couldn't get out of. And there's an even greater fire of judgment. And the only thing that could deliver us is Jesus, His mercy, His grace, and the work that He's done.